All right, well, good afternoon. I'm happy to be here talking today about giving this talk, which is titled Assessing Injuries, Chronic Disease Exacerbations, and Mental Health Problems After the South Napa Earthquake, California, 2014. And as Richard just mentioned, Kathleen Atfield is the first and submitting author on this talk, but she was unable to be here at the conference, so I'll be giving it in her place. And I also want to acknowledge our collaborators on this project. So nearly 10 months ago, on Sunday, August 24th at 3:20 in the morning, a 6.0 earthquake struck the San Francisco Bay Area. This was the largest earthquake to hit the Bay Area since the 6.9 magnitude Loma Prieta earthquake in 1989. The epicenter of the South Napa earthquake was in American Canyon, which is across the bay from San Francisco, and about 5 miles south of the city of Napa. In the cities of Napa and American Canyon, shaking lasted for about 20 seconds. And although the earthquake impacted multiple counties, the focus of this talk will be on Napa County, which suffered most of the damage and the extent of injuries. So most of the media coverage focused on damage to the wineries in Napa County. However, the earthquake also damaged roadways, water lines, and buildings, and resulted in fires in 5 homes, including 4 in a mobile home park. It also caused widespread power outages. In Napa County alone, 153 buildings were red tagged, meaning that they were too dangerous to inhabit, while more than 1,100 buildings were yellow tagged, meaning their habitability was limited. For example, a chimney had fallen down or a porch was damaged. Many injuries occurred in the hours after the earthquake during cleanup. So emergency department data that were collected by the Napa County epidemiologist, Jennifer Henn, indicated that 283 injuries were reported within Napa County after the earthquake. 246 of these were treated at hospitals. 18 of those were admitted, 4 in critical condition. And then 2 fatalities occurred in the weeks following the earthquake as a result of traumatic injuries incurred during or immediately after the earthquake, but that were not immediately fatal. Napa County itself, as a municipality, dealt with red and yellow tagged county buildings and displaced employees, including the Napa County Public Health Department. But they were still able to coordinate a response that provided mental health services to over 1,300 residents, mobilized the mutual aid request process and hospital preparedness program assets, and they opened an American Red Cross shelter for several days. That shelter provided over 400 stays, overnight stays, served over 5,300 meals and 8,500 snacks. So within 1 day of the earthquake, a request was made by Napa County Public Health to the Emergency Preparedness Team in the Division of Environmental and Occupational Disease Control at the California Department of Public Health to help plan and execute a rapid needs assessment within the city of Napa that would assess earthquake-associated health effects and public health preparedness among households in the city of Napa. We used the CASPER methodology to carry out this rapid needs assessment. The CASPER methodology was developed by CDC for rapid assessment of population estimates of health status and basic needs of a community following disaster. So I just want to give you a summary of our timeline. The earthquake struck at 3:20 in the morning, as I mentioned earlier, on Sunday, August 24th. Later that day, Governor Brown declared a state of emergency. The request from NCPH came the next day, and we conducted an initial brainstorm later that week for the CASPER. 2 weeks later, President Obama declared a presidential disaster declaration. And then we were in the field for 3 days the following week collecting data within Napa. And then exactly 1 month after the earthquake, we released our preliminary report of our CASPER results to Napa County Public Health. So given all the planning and the moving pieces that are involved in planning and executing a CASPER, we were quite pleased with the timeliness of our report back to Napa County. So CASPER allows for the estimation of population estimates from a probability-based sample of households located within a particular sampling frame. And in our case, that sampling frame was the city of Napa, which we assumed from the 2010 census to have about 30,000 households. Importantly, it collects household-level data, not individual-level data. And the sample is collected in two stages. So in the first stage, one selects 30 clusters, and in this case they were census blocks, from among all the clusters in the sampling frame. And the selection of those clusters is based on probability proportional to the number of housing units within that cluster. So clusters that have more housing units have a higher chance of being selected into your sample. And then in the second stage, seven households within each cluster are selected by systematic random sampling. So essentially, within each of the 30 clusters, we're selecting seven equally spaced houses within that cluster. So in total, the target sample size is 210 households. And this map shows the black outline shows our sampling frame, the city of Napa, and then the shaded regions are our 30 clusters. And the dimensions of this figure is approximately 4 miles by 6 miles. So working with Napa County Public Health, we developed a 48-question questionnaire, and questions were drawn from other CASPERs that had been conducted within California and also from other states, as well as adapted elements from the SciStart psychological triage system, which is a tool developed by Chip Schreiber at UC Irvine for psychological triaging during emergency response. Questions covered on the questionnaire, including those related to demographics of the household, property damage experienced by the household, household emergency preparedness, and then we asked questions asking if anyone in the household had incurred injuries, exacerbation of chronic health conditions, or mental health conditions. And for mental health, we focused on traumatic exposures that could elevate one's risk for PTSD, and I'll go into a little bit more detail about what that means a little bit later. And we also had English and Spanish language versions of the questionnaire, and I should also mention that for the purpose of the interview, an eligible interviewee was one who was a resident of the household and who was at least 18 years or older. So over the three-day field survey event, 15 two-person teams of volunteers were assigned two clusters each in which to interview households. Data collected during the interviews were entered into our database within 1 day of obtaining the interview, so we were entering the data almost in real time. So we had laptops in the field and we were able to enter the data sort of the day after the interviews occurred. And we performed weighted analysis on the data so we could arrive at population estimates for the entire sampling frame. So even though our objectives for the CASPER were many-fold, today I'm just focusing on the three areas of health inquiry. Napa County was interested in learning what the frequency of injury and seeking of care was, what was the frequency of chronic health condition exacerbation, and what was the frequency of risk factors for post-traumatic stress disorder. And this is how we defined traumatic exposures and stressors. And the reason why we address traumatic exposures is because distress or stressors after disasters is very common, as you might expect, including feelings of anxiety, fear, or distraction, and may need certain types of mental health services. However, distress is not a significant predictor of longer-term clinical conditions, including PTSD, which cannot be diagnosed before 4 weeks have passed since the event. So our first category here collected information on traumatic exposures that are known to elevate the risk of PTSD. And like I said earlier, these were drawn from the SciStart psychological triage system, which is used by the Red Cross. So after 3 days in the field, we obtained 201 interviews, which was only 9 short of our goal of 210. Overall, we had attempted to contact 488 households, and which gave us a contact rate, and these various rates are defined by CASPER, a contact rate of 41%. We were able to speak with an eligible resident in 323 households, giving us a cooperation rate of 62%. And then our completion rate, which was sort of the proportion of completed interviews relative to our goal, was 96%. We were thrilled with this result. So in the next few slides, you're going to see two columns. The column reporting results. And the column in the middle, the unweighted N, gives you the number of households out of the 201 that answered yes to that particular question. And then the column on the right gives that the population estimate, so what we would expect to see among all 30,000 households within the sampling frame. So first, just painting a picture of the demographics of the city of Napa. So most of the homes were single-family structures, and 75% of them were predominantly English-speaking. 30 of the 201 households were connected in Spanish, and then there were other languages mentioned as well, including Nepali, Portuguese, and Chinese as being the main household languages. And I also just want to show American Community Survey data for 2013 for the city of Napa, just to give a comparison of what they estimated in their survey to what we found in ours. And I think that even though the definitions are not identical between how ACS defines housing structure and language spoken in the home, they're close, but also the estimates that they're estimating and what we found in our CASPER are reasonably close as well. So we think this provides a nice sort of validation of our method. So we were happy to see this. And then finally, 17% of households had a member who was younger than 5 years old, and 7% had an elderly resident 80 years or older. So Napa has a reputation for being an affluent area, and there are certainly pockets of affluence there, but a sizable number of low and middle income residents reside there as well. So just over half of households reported annual income of less than or equal to $70,000, with 22% reporting income less than $30,000. And just keep in mind that the Bay Area has a very high cost of living, so $70,000 doesn't get you very far, certainly when the size of your household is 3 people, which was the average in this case. So 23% of households had at least one household member who sustained an injury either during or following the earthquake. And then in little over half of those households, or 11% of all households, the injury was sustained during cleanup. This table shows the types of injuries among the 23% of households reporting any injury. The predominant injury type was a cut, puncture, large scrape, or bruise, followed by strain or sprain. And of those who had noted an injury in the household, 85% did not seek care for every injured member. And we found that the major reason was that folks thought that the injury wasn't serious enough. However, 15% were too busy and 10% were worried about cost or insurance. 132 households listed one or more of 11 pre-existing chronic health conditions affecting someone in the household, such as asthma or heart disease, which translated to 64% of all households. 26% of those households reporting an existing chronic health condition reported a worsening of the condition after the earthquake. And then of those in which the condition worsened, 56% of those reported seeking additional care. These are the top 4 conditions reported by households. Hypertension had the highest pre-existing prevalence with 35%. Compared to asthma, mental health, and diabetes. However, mental health was the highest reported to have worsened, perhaps unsurprisingly, at 49%, and for seeking of additional care at 56%. Having distress was very common at 75%. 27% of households had at least one member who experienced a traumatic exposure, which would elevate the risk of PTSD. Of households that reported distress or a traumatic experience, 41% reported that they sought additional help with mental health issues. And the most common sources for help were from a religious leader, a friend, or from a pre-existing support group. But among those who did not seek help, the predominant reason was that the troubles were not deemed serious enough. But a good number also didn't seek help because they were too busy, did not know where to go, or had no phone service. So in summary, we saw that a substantial portion of injuries occurred during cleanup activities. Chronic disease exacerbations were most frequently observed with mental health, hypertension, and asthma. And then lastly, more than a quarter of the population had a traumatic event or experience that raised concerns for PTSD. The use of rapid assessment was a key tool for providing timely information to Napa County for emergency response, recovery efforts, and preparedness activities. Including assessment of traumatic exposures and events provided the means to plan for mental health needs, particularly for Napa County. Our limitations included the fact that we surveyed mostly during daylight hours, so we missed participants who were, you know, at work during the day. We also missed occupants who had not returned home because their home was too damaged and not habitable. And then finally, because this is a household-based survey, we're unable to make any inference about individuals within the household. So recommendations to Napa County were to extend preparedness messaging to include heavy gloves and emergency kits and accessibility to closed-toed shoes for cleanup, as many of the injuries did occur during cleanup. We also recommended that Napa evaluate their surge capacity of medical and mental health services, since the number of injuries here could easily have been exceeded in a more severe earthquake. And finally, we recommended that they continue offering a range of post-disaster mental health services over the following months and to promote community resiliency. So I'd like to acknowledge and thank a number of partners who helped us with this project and who were involved in its success. And also I want to plug a couple other things. So tomorrow I'll be presenting an abstract on emergency preparedness results from our from this CASPER. In addition, the report that we published or reported back to Napa County is available online at that URL. And I thank you very much for your attention and am happy to take any questions.
Yes. Did you do any follow-up after the CASPER to see if, between 4 weeks and 6 months later, to see if people in the community developed PTSD?
We haven't. There has been talk, and there was an interest in actually following up on certain cases that appeared in emergency departments, and some of them may have been for mental health services, but we've kind of been overloaded so far this year, so we haven't yet followed through with that, but that is something that is on our radar. Thank you.
So could you comment on, so the injuries that were occurring, were they primarily related to cleanup of their housing or...
Yes. Yeah. I didn't report at all actually on the damage that was sustained in homes, but there were a lot of bookshelves that fell over, TVs that were not attached to walls that also fell over. So there was a lot of broken glass and porcelain on the floor. So a lot of the injuries were cuts and scrapes and things. So
this makes me think maybe this is sort of a far-out preventive action, but in areas such as California where there might be earthquakes, could they have a mobile team of contractors or you know, laborers that are more used to handling things like that, that could either assist or direct homeowners?
That is a great idea. And yeah, I'll have to suggest that to Napa County. I do think that because this earthquake occurred in the middle of the night, you had people who were awoken in the middle of the night and then, you know, were kind of got out of bed, you know, wanting to get outside or just away from anything that might fall on them. So even though it is true that a lot of these injuries did occur during cleanup, I guess the question would remain how quickly those teams could mobilize and, you know, get to people before they do become injured.
I'm just curious, we're actually kind of going through this right now, the whole process. Did you do any, since a lot of the injuries were cleanup related, did you do any like assessment for tetanus shot status and exposure? And would you recommend it if you did?
So that question was, I believe, on a draft version of our questionnaire. And then because we had to cut somewhere, I think that's one of the questions that got cut. So yes, I mean, if that's something that you're interested in knowing, certainly I would recommend including that on your questionnaire. And I should say, in planning the CASPER, you know, many of you may know this if you've done a CASPER or designed questionnaires before. I mean, designing this questionnaire for this CASPER was very, very difficult, right? Because there's just so much you feel like you want to know, but you want to keep the questionnaire short so you can get the interview and, you know, not take an hour of someone's time to get this information. So I think what we ended up deciding was, you know, what would we do with that information if we knew, well, one, do we think the information that we would have received from respondents would have been useful? And how do you ask a household about tetanus? You know, do you say, you know, are all of the members of your household immunized? You know, you have to kind of think about, like, for a household-based survey, how you ask the question that will tell you something meaningful about the household. So it gets to be a bit tricky.
Okay,
thank you very much.